Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about antinomy, a element in the periodic table, and we'll have a general talk about it, but more about sort of the funny naming conventions. And antinomy is no better element to start with looking at funny naming conventions. It's got a Latin name, SB, so that's a long way from antinomy. It's sort of one of those odd ones. I'm sure if anyone wrote down SB, they'd really struggle to know what it was. But the actual name antinomy, there's lots of different sources out there. But because it's poisonous and the monks used it, it was antinomy means monk killer, or could mean monk killer, or anti-monk. Antinomy, anti-monkey, anti-monk. Antinomy, the anti-monk thing. So that's really up there in the entertaining element names, like with the bromine being the stinky element, argon being the lazy element, and antinomy, the anti-monk element, nickel from a sprite, or the element of the devil. So antinomy is really interesting how you get there, and it's one of these elements which you don't hear about, but it's been with us since ancient times, and used by the Egyptians for part of the cosmetic palette. Just to cite you in where it is before we start discussing general topic of funny letters, funny names in the periodic table. That's what I'm going to. But antinomy is in that carbons group 14, or group 4. Group 4 in the school, group 14 in the adult periodic table. The adult periodic table has the transition metals in there. And so it's group 15, which is the going downwards, nitrogen, phosphorus, arsenic, antinomy, bismuth. Now, that's just a testament to gradually improving memory as I go over it. And you would have heard me read through periodic table book and start to talk about different parts of the periodic table and gradually grow my memory. So it's in that group of elements, the N, which has got five electrons in the outer shell, 2 + 5, 7 electrons, and then going up. Of course, phosphorus is something which really doesn't follow the octet rule at all. You can force it to follow it, but you wind up doing all sorts of, I don't know, electron configuration yoga, I call it, and you get things which really is totally not that enlightening, and sort of isomers. This is phosphorus going up, but phosphorus is well worth knowing. So nitrogen, every third element in your the backbone of your proteins is a nitrogen. So there's nitrogen, carbon, carbon, nitrogen, carbon, carbon, nitrogen, carbon, carbon. That's your amino acids. The amino part of it is the nitrogen part of it. And then phosphorus, sort of a similar thing, but sort of a slightly less, you know, more atoms get in the act. But there's a phosphorus between every letter of your DNA. So it's really important that every bit of your energy, you live, your cells live off of phosphorus fuel, which is derived, is energized and recycled like a rechargeable battery from sugar. So the sugar is chewed up, but it re-energizes the phosphorus. So phosphorus is important. It's about a match head inside of you. It's a fairly essential element. Arsenic is not a nice element, in that it can substitute in for phosphor, and actually just, it's just a bad day for your body if you eat too much arsenic. Antinomy, it's a little bit toxic, a bit more different. And I suppose the interesting thing is that SB, monk killer, and it's got the origin of a Latin name, so that's perhaps interesting. But reading into the elements and the names gives you a whole sort of vision of complexity of history. It's a historical cultural artifact, and you put aside the science, so it's mixing science and culture together. And so monk killer, antinomy, tin is before the element, before going back, before antinomy, and it's in the carbon line. So antinomy is in the nitrogen line. I think it's actually, I almost prefer to call it carbon line and the P subtable. So carbon is group 14 or group 4 in school child nomenclature. And so it goes carbon, silicon, germanium. You know, there's all that famous HSC questions. You know, germanium is a semiconductor. It's easier to purify, but it's not as sexy as, you couldn't write that in an exam. You'd get all a call from all the examiners, and who will be sanctioned if you started writing things like that. But germanium is interesting. Then after germanium is tin, then lead. And so lead and bismuth go together and all that type of stuff. But lead obviously is Pb. Tin is Sn. Tin, Sn. You got an N for tin, stuff like that. And there's this thing about the naming of elements and how they're just, they don't line up with English, well, partly because they're from ancient times. So your Ag, Au, which is silver, gold is Ag, and Au is silver. All that type of stuff, it all harks back from ancient times before we English got really established. So it's got the Latin that's acceptable, and so it's rather interesting to go across. So if talking about the most element which I sort of like, because people expect you to get it wrong, because they say, oh, look, you're dyslexic, you're probably going to get this element wrong. And then when I really think about it, it shows not necessarily my dyslexia, but another form of, other forms of sort of social dyslexia. So if you allow me to go for a short while, this is potassium. Now, I'll let you think for a short while about what potassium's, kittens, kettles, Kmart, craftwork have in common. Yeah, they all begin with the letter K. So K, again, from some sort of Latin. I don't know whether there's too many K words in Latin. I can't think. I don't know where K comes from as a symbol. And people say, oh, well, you should get that confused because potassium. And I sort of say, oh, potassium. Well, that's because these Dutch people who are using potassium nitrate to make gunpowder used to get ash and put it in a big pot and boil it for a long while and use the differential solubility of potassium nitrate to get this out. And so this potash was... the potash, soluble potash, was potassium. So that's why it's called potassium. And they say, I want to set you up for this. That people then say, well, what makes you think that potassium has got anything to do with potash? And you go, I'm not communicating here. You know, and they say, well, you've bet you read that on Wikipedia, or that's most unlikely. We know that potassium has got something to do with the letter K somehow, and you're sort of left bewildered there. But I want to talk about dyslexia associated with them. I sort of had a phobia of vitamin K. In fact, I have to make sure that I don't have too much vitamin K, or I have the normal amount of vitamin K, but I'm taking a certain amount of rat poison, at the moment 6 milligrams of rat poison a day, called warfarin. And what it does is it gets into the kidney, the liver, and destroys the process, the cycle, interferes with the cycle, meaning that you can't make so much potassium. Sorry, so much potassium, it's wrong. I'm going completely mad here. So much vitamin K. So vitamin K is a vitamine. So it's an amine, some nitrogen in it. And it's vital. It's necessary for life. So there are certain vitamins that you can make yourself and other vitamins that you need from food. You know, it's the body said, you know what, I think you're eating enough of this naturally. We can sort of sit back and just, you've got to eat so much sugar and so much fat and stuff like that. And we're going to get these vitamins anyway, so they're essential for life, but we make them ourselves. Look, there's vitamin D, which is photocatalyzed by the sun. You need sunlight to make vitamin D, or you get rickets. Vitamin K, if you don't have enough of it, you start bleeding. And the aim is that I've got to have a very finely tuned vitamin K. There's a reason I'm talking about this, because I've got a little chaotic carbon heart valve is being put into me, so I'm part cyborg, but part of cyborg is that I have to bleed. For me, it's 2.5 to 3.5 times more than a normal person, so they've got to suppress my vitamin K. So I have to, you know, there's some, I just want to think of it. So my memory's faded me. It's not ricotta, it's cannelloni. There you go. Cannelloni with spinach in it. If it's cooked, it's really nice, but I have to not eat it. If there's blueberry sauce, I may have a blueberry, but only one of them. If I want to, if, you know, if I think I want to binge, I have to binge every day. And that means if I'm a binge person, I take more of this warfarin stuff to level off. And someone made the family these blueberry pancakes, and you're just not understanding when I couldn't eat it, or I just wouldn't eat it. Kiwi fruits is another thing with vitamin K. Kiwi fruit, I thought, oh, I just really feel like a kiwi fruit. I've just been cautious. I'll just go, oh, kiwi fruit is vitamin K on steroids. You know, it's just amazing. But then I went, oh, how am I going to do it? And there's apparently a variety of kiwi fruit. It's the green kiwi fruit you have to watch out for, but it's the golden kiwi fruit, a golden kiwi fruit. And I thought, oh, I will never see this again. I just so want it. And then, of course, the very next shop I went into, supermarket there, there was someone in the supermarket selling a new variety. Here, please taste golden kiwi fruit. And of course, I embarrassed my family by saying, yes, yes, it's there. So, but I had sort of gone through this entire vitamin K story. And so talking to someone, they said, you're not normal. You can't eat all these things. You know, this must be hard. Here, let me sneak some broccoli to you, or something like that. It's just insane sort of lack of understanding of I don't know, the sort of knowledge and control of your own destiny. And they said, but you won't be able to eat bananas. And I said, oh no, that's the element potassium in it. And that's also got the letter K, but there's vitamin K and the element K, which is potassium. Just a small side of potassium. Most of the argon in our atmosphere is from the radioactive potassium, which is gone. And I have to work out why we've got radioactive potassium. There has to be a reason for it. But all the argon in our atmosphere, 1% of our atmosphere is off potassium, if you like. Potassium 40, I think potassium 38 is the stable isotope. And so if you want to get something going, you get potassium salt, get your Geiger counter up to the potassium salt. That's KCl rather than NaCl. And it's supposed to not be all that hard for you. Again, that's sort of heart. Things very high in potassium, you have to scratch your head about if you're looking at heart. But apparently I'm all clear on that type of stuff. I can go for all that US. So the US avoids salt, but they can't not change their taste buds. They have potassium salt, which tastes allegedly the same. Sea salt tastes a bit different. I understand sea salt's got some magnesium chloride, which you can sort of taste a little bit of, or even calcium chloride, which is sort of like the bulk standard. So common calcium chloride. Like getting back to potassium chloride, so I sort of labour the distinction between vitamin K and the element K. And this person then listened and then continued, and I checked time and time again that this person was conceptually dyslexic between the difference between vitamin K and the element K. And I thought, that is an amazing thing, that they're concerned about me being dyslexic, but they are actually conceptually dyslexic. They cannot tell the difference. So after a certain time, they said, all right, okay, but you can't eat bananas, you know, after all this story. So that's sort of explaining how I got up to it. You know, it's the K. And then when I probed more deeply and then found a number of people who say, what would you know about the periodic table? Why do you know anything? You're just a quantum physicist. How come you don't know anything? And I've sort of understood there's another form of dyslexia, which is dyslexia in being able to tell the difference between, you know, someone's a nerd who's just read a science magazine. It's I'm trying to think of the word, ambulance, the sort of exuberant, spouting off science, and someone who's probably a little bit quieter, also talking off science, and you know how dyslexia, you can't tell between a B and a D or something like that, that appear to be the same, and you can't actually physically distinguish those two things, and so there's that other deeper level of dyslexia. So there's actual dyslexia, conceptual dyslexia, where people who actually don't suffer from the first dyslexia can suffer from that. But furthermore, the actual, there's a deeper sort of social dyslexia where we just can't tell the difference between someone who knows about things or someone espousing it. And it's similar, I think, I suppose the giveaway for me is that people who, experts who really know things, they're pretty relaxed, they're pretty chilled in terms of, okay, I know it now. No, that's good. There's sort of not the next thing of, what do I do now? What they tend to do now is want to find out more information, whereas people who just have discovered things want to immediately go to their soapbox, you know, set up their nearest soapbox and talk about it. And so and what happens is you tend to go around listening to people and you say, oh, I've heard that. Is there much more you want to say? No, there's not. So we've done antinomy, the monk killer. I love that. Nickel, the element of the devil. Bromine, the stinky gas. Argon, the lazy gas. I sort of love this sort of sledging periodic table style. Potassium, what has that got to do with potash? What makes you think potassium has got anything to do with potash? Sort of like, it's just, okay, potash, I believe that, but potash is a stuff. Potash wouldn't come ash from a pot, would it? Sort of intense thing. Then we've got to go off and elements which just, if you're going from the, so one of the artifacts of this social dyslexia where you sort of love, sort of like the, I've got Professor, nothing against Professor Brian Cox or David Attenborough, all these famous, or Professor Sumner Miller, these name things, that the science comes from them, as opposed from the science comes from actually thinking scientifically and going through the periodic table. I had a sort of don't get this wrong, but I'm trying to think of another word for a love affair, crush. It's sort of an academic crush where you're not interested in the person, you're interested in an element or an aspect on lutetium. And so if you imagine dolls, scientific dolls, where an element's hidden within another element, it's hidden within another element, it's sort of not, they're actually not inside an element, but they're inside the same compound, and they're so chemically similar, they're indistinguishable. And in fact, praseodymium and neodymium means, didymium means twin, and it used to be a twinned element, and one's the green twin, and one's called the new twin. Of course, green twin, like, how did that come there, come about? But there you go, the periodic table. But this goes to yttrium, the why, the element why. No, why the element? No, the letter why the element, not why the element. Yttrium, why, and why terbium, ytterbium. Ytterbium. Ytterbium? Oh, I don't know. It's in optical fiber lasers and neodymium YAG. Yeah, YAG is ytterbium in that element. So, you, yeah. So, unfortunately, people, I don't know, that they're not too precious about pronunciation up here. So, here's the YAG laser. Yeah, the flash tube's gone, the YAG laser. Oh, bloody Q switching's not working on the YAG laser. It's not what it used to be. It was Q, in terms of like a Buck Rogers old style laser, is this ruby. You know, so instead of a ruby laser, you get a YAG laser. And so, ytterbium? Something rather garnet. I don't know what the A stands for. So that's pronunciation's not there. So you've got yttrium and ytterbium, and they're sort of like throw a dyslexic person ytterbium. You go to see if you can get a school kid to pronounce the letters y to t. You know, two T's together. That's, well, it's in bitter or batter or t. But ytterbium, yttrium, it's almost impossible to pronounce. It's all like a back-to-front thing. It's sort of like, I don't know, a googly, throwing a googly at a dyslexic person. How could you pronounce that? And, of course, there's, for me, intense interest in that. These are the what I call the IKEA elements. They're all the they're all shaped along a line of an Allen key, and I associate an Allen key with IKEA in Sweden, so that's a bit of a plug for IKEA. And I don't know whether I should give IKEA a plug. It just defies my brain. The entire IKEA concept defies my brain. What's happening at IKEA? However, yttrium was found in Ytterbury, a suburb of Stockholm, and I thought fairly interesting, and it's in this one mine has produced just an enormous quantity of the periodic table. So there's elements all hiding each other that decide where we're going to hide. We'll hide in a suburb of Stockholm, yttrium, and that is giving us two Y elements, Y and YB, ytterbium. Erbium, I can't remember, it's some other sort of Norse name, erbium. I can't really remember what erbium stands for, but erbium and ytterbium is the erbium from Ytterbury, and yttrium is the element from Ytterbury. And sorry for any Swedish. Now, I remember the Swedish tennis person called Ivan Lindell, maybe? I think he was a tennis player, and of course the ABBA people. I can't tell you what the ABBA names are. Yeah, and obviously Princess Caroline of Sweden, they were just like super, super Catholic people in the Reformation, that type of people. That's sort of the limit of Swedish knowledge, and of course some Vikings, but I'm not sure if they're from Sweden. But coming back to Ytterbury, so it is fair enough that there's a town, you want to celebrate Ytterbury. It's a sort of fat little island off there, and it's sort of mind-bending to actually have a look at it in Google Maps afterwards. So Ytterbury, and Ytterbury had hidden in the Ytterbium, I can't even pronounce it now, the Y element. So it goes scandium for Scandinavia, ytterbium, and then of course you think the next element down, hidden in the ytterbium, actually hidden in the ytterbium. I can't even pronounce it. Ytterbium is a rare earth. Can't pronounce it now. This is actual physical dyslexia coming in, so I'll have to go back and reprogram myself to pronounce it. So scandium, yttrium. Yttrium and ytterbium. There you go. It's how difficult is that? Now, lutetium is named after Paris, and somehow the French weaseled in on and got in the name of, well, let's name an element after Paris. You think Parisium? No, it's Parisian. No, of course it has to be ancient and important. Of course, it's only discovered recently as a contaminant of yttrium. So yttrium, ytterbium, all found out at this thing, and it's sort of meant that if Latin hasn't been hard enough, the odd names aren't hard enough, there's letters which are sort of unknown to the English, you know, to torture us people out there. Then you go, let's have a think about what does yttrium mean in Swedish. You know, what certain things, I'm sure IKEA has only recently invented. What's yttrium? All I think of is Volvo and Saab and all that type of stuff. Surely that would mean some sort of Swedish word, sort of like, I don't know what they have, sauna, or I don't know, some sort of Swedish thing. They have these Swedish Christmas candle events, and you know, they've got a little whiff of the pagan past of it going in. So perhaps it would mean, yttrium would mean village of the helmets with the horns off them, that of Wagnerian or something like that. So I thought, oh, let's look at what yttrium actually, or ytterby actually stands for. What does it actually stand for? And ytterby means, in Swedish, wait for it, outer village. So, outer village, it's like, here's a mine, and what do we name the village outside the mine? We'll call it ytterby, outer village. It's sort of like naming your local shop's shopping centre. So this Swedish for outer village has actually got into the periodic table, and that's sort of mind-blowing. And then ytterby, there's certain places I sort of really want to visit. There's Foucault's pendulum in the Pantheon in Paris. I just want to visit that. That's great. Various libraries, the Bodleian Library. Just like to visit, like to hang out there. Various, a lot of the places, you know, Babylon's gone, and you know, I'd like to visit, fortunately, the Rose City in Syria. I'd like to visit all these sorts of beautiful places. I'd like to visit ytterby, the Swedish birth of two elements of the periodic table. Even though the Swedes have managed to get shopping village or outer village into the periodic table not once but twice, in the most mind-bendingly complicated way. It was sort of like enough to actually make the periodic table incomprehensible for most people. And so you look on it, and then what it is, it's got all these, you look at it, and you look at it from Google Earth, you look at your home of Google Earth, you look at, which is Glenbrook, you can have a, if you want to, you can have a good squeeze at Glenbrook. And Glenbrook's got, you know, I don't know, if you really look, there's junk in people's yards, and there's trees everywhere. Ytterby is these large Swedish houses, and you know, huge spaces, and everything, it's just lawn. There's a house, and they've got swimming pools up there near the Arctic Circle. That's crazy to go along, and the houses are all perfect. There's none, if you look around, Google Earth around, sorry, not Google Earth. Yeah, it is Google Earth. You Google Maps at our place, you can see the odd, that looks a bit like a shack to me. There's no shacks. It's all like perfect. Perfect. So they've just gone to the IKEA store, and it's almost like a Lego village up there. So nice and crisp and clean, and it's big lawns, and there's sort of, and all the lawns are perfect, all green. And look at Australia, and all the lawns are sort of pretty parched and burnt, and yeah, and there's these scraggly trees, and up in there is all these beautiful pines. So nice. Then you go, oh, well, perhaps opposite, nice to go to a restaurant around there. You look around, and the most of all, it's got basically a service station, a convenience store. And I think that's just, you know, in terms of periodic table, the best. So we've done K, we've done SN, SB, SB, Monk Killer, sort of like this. But in terms of periodic table mayhem, this is dyslexia mayhem. It's the element R. So R. Okay, so after potassium, going down, it goes rubidium. So it goes lithium, sodium, potassium. Okay, let's think. Then rubidium. Who has heard of rubidium? Cesium is a bit more often. Cesium, and then francium. And yeah, francium is sort of like, well, let's talk about it. It's an element on the corner. So you know about that. Cesium, rubidium, RB. And then you have rhenium going in the R, going in the periodic table, going into that. Oh, I forgot what's underneath rhenium. Oh, yeah, rhenium's underneath technetium. It's in the sort of the boondocks of the transition elements. There's one element which hasn't even turned up. It's a gap. It's technetium. It says, look, it's just too hard. Universe, I'm just not going to be here. So there's a gap, technetium. So your manganese, technetium, and then I think it's rhenium after the Rhine, sort of the last element discovered. So it's like the getting down to the, you know, the last round of trivia night, rhenium, and it's Re. It's not Rh, because it's actually spelled Rhein. So Re, even though it's spelled Rh, rhenium, after the Rhine gold, you know, all that Norse sort of Teutonic view. I'm going to be so upset. I'm going to throw myself into the Rhine. I've heard one German say, so upset, I'm going to throw myself into Rhine, but that person didn't, incidentally. So there's the rhenium, and then there's ruthenium. Now, ruthenium, I think, is under iron, and that's Ru. So we've got Rb, Re, Ru. Oh, sorry, I forgot. Radium is Ra. Radium is right underneath the magnesium ones. So we've got Rb, Ra, Re, Ru, and finally rhodium. And rhodium is, you think it would be Ro, because no, it's Rh, rod, because this person thought he would name the element rose, because that's the first coloured salt he got out of it, was a rose coloured salt. So the element itself doesn't look rose coloured. In fact, it's got no rhodium, and I did a podcast on it. And basically, it's sort of like this gargoyle of dyslexia, guarding the periodic table from being understood. And that's with the Ys, the Y of the periodic table, that is the yttrium and ytterbium, and just how incredibly inane is that, you know, from Monk Killer from thousands of years ago to a really lovely suburb. I wouldn't mind spending a summer, a weekend there, perhaps more. It would be great. You'd really, so compared to the periodic table, this is, and then in terms of genuine stopping up, you've got these like this gargoyle or this monster guarding the periodic table, and this is the dyslexia of the letter R. And really, you have to podcast on it or think about it for your brain to actually, when you go, oh, I feel uncertain about this, it's got all the information sorted out. So let's do the letter R again. It's rubidium, radium. Okay, that's the radioactive one from Madame Curie, who she fed it to the French soldiers who didn't literally fell apart as a bag of potatoes from eating it. And rhodium, which is the stuff they put in aircraft to make sure that it doesn't turn into a sort of like a, I don't know, some stupid thing after you heat it up, the engine cools down to exactly as it was machined afterwards. And ruthenium. Now, ruthenium is from Rus. I don't know how they identified it. It was, I read somewhere that it was used for fingerprinting. And so this inevitable break-in at the school, there was this, there with, the, you know, the hat and the guns and stuff like that, and he was there. And I said, don't mind me asking you a question. No, mate, come straight along, shoot away, mate. I said, do you have any ruthenium in your kit? Because apparently that's supposed to really react with the fat of... Oh, I didn't know whether this was true. You know, you tend to check this out. And he said, no, use mostly talc. In fact, they have 20 or more different powders they put on for different conditions. And he said, I'm sure there's ruthenium in there, but you have to order it in specially, you know, people. So apparently, lifting fingerprints is a bit of an art. And so he had talc, carbon black, you know, this is things that I could do. But there's, you know, a whole heap of chemicals to do. Of course, and I think they can even, they've been working on the, if you spray WD-40, if you do a break and then you spray WD-40, that sort of wipes out all the fingerprints. But I think people are working out how to even undo that to get across. So ruthenium there, that's apart from that. And then rhodium, which is the first part of your catalytic converter. And so you're getting some really weird naming. You have to, you know, I'm sure you could psychoanalyze some of these people. Say, why did you name it that way? We've covered the periodic table. And, of course, what that's doing is, I hope that's been entertaining, but it's also helping me remember it. Because there's sort of different... parallel thoughts in different ways. There's demons out there in the world of people you speak with who tend to knock your confidence off when you're looking at it. But there's also, that's outside the periodic table in society, there's also demons within the periodic table, like the letter Y, the letter S, how that's used. There's sulfur as well. I was thinking if there's any other S, or selenium, SE. S is a really common one. R is sort of like the most difficult letter to get around. And you really have to enter the periodic table from structurally in subtables and then just slowly get your memory up and running. So if I can just do the top transition elements. Here we go, drum roll. It's scandium. Scandium, titanium, vanadium, that's three, chromium, manganese, iron, cobalt, nickel, copper, zinc, that's the top. So it's sort of like if you imagine you're bushwalking and you've just seen a creek and you know up further up the creek there's stepping stones, there's like 10 stepping stones, but it's occasionally you walk up, you're walking up to that is like it's overgrown and you've had a bit of a a chance to poke around and saying, oh, what's confusing me? Oh, the letter R just really confuses me, the periodic table. And occasionally you have to sort of, it's like getting past a mountain troll. You have to remember the magic words to say. And so it's sort of like you step on your first stone, which is Scandium. So you know that rule from the Archaea story. And then for me, I just sort of think of titanium. I've forgotten what's actually under titanium, zirconium, hafnium going down. So I remember that. And of course, vanadium is quite easy to remember because vanadium is on top of niobium. Did I put niobium? I forgot niobium. N is niobium. It's not an R letter. Good God. That would have been embarrassing. Tantalum. And then that's the V. And then chromium, macrodium, molybdenum, probably tungsten underneath that. Chrome and tungsten, I have to remember. And then the boring elements, manganese. Look, I've got a lot of respect for manganese. Technetium, the element which is just missing in action. And then underneath that is Re, rhenium. Rhenium is that, after rhenium, I don't know how you pronounce that. That's the for jet engines. But you can see sort of how I'm trying to get into the, memorizing the periodic table, and it's sort of like these straws of memory that you go through different ways, and the implications of certain things, and the fact that you talk about it, and people have this conceptual dyslexia on many, many levels. This is not distinguishing between things, not distinguishing between genuine knowledge and pop knowledge. Thanks a lot for listening. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.